Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome on into Sports Talk, our Friday, May 2nd edition. Going to be going till 6 p.m. this evening. We got LSU baseball that's been postponed, though, gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
Charlie had it in the Sports Flash. Is now an 8 o'clock first pitch, 7:30 pregame coverage due to tumultuous weather, I should say, in College Station as the second-ranked Tigers get ready to take on Texas A&M. And the Aggies, man, they were the runner-ups in the College World Series a year ago, and they just haven't been having a great season. Kind of turned things around a little bit, but then last weekend, a rough sweep for them at Tennessee. Texas, sorry. Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, can I be honest with you? I don't think the college baseball season really starts until the NFL draft ends. At least, like, in my mind. Like, yes, they're playing games. I get it, they're playing games. But this is when, like, the rubber really meets the road.
You're
for me.
Waiting to get down to the nitty gritty here.
Well, it's kind of like how the Pelican season doesn't start until the Saints season ends, right? The problem is the Pelican season was over this year before the Saints season ended, is technically, like, because they had no. Anyway.
Yeah.
To me, this is when college baseball really starts to get fun. And the problem is, this is also when the thunderstorms really start to have a great time in the afternoons down in South Louisiana. So
I did see also Tennessee is experiencing a weather delay over there. So like you said, it's just the mood around the South right now is thunderstorms are in the air. Luckily, not looking like Jazz Fest will be affected, though, today for all of you Fest goers out there. Definitely wish I was in that number, hoping to get out there at some point this weekend. Because I still got that garlic ribeye po' boy on my mind.
Yeah, I think Sunday's my day.
That's Lenny day, right? Lenny Kravitz?
Yes. We'll see how difficult that is to navigate. But that's my goal. That's my target. Last week was obviously a non-starter for us.
That's why when the Jazz Fest lineup comes out every year, I'm always like hoping and praying. I'm like, please don't be anybody really good that I want to see that first weekend, right?
Because
I'll get really mad because there's no way it's happening. Just no ifs, ands, or buts on it.
Nope.
Did you get to watch any of the NBA playoff action last night?
You know, I didn't get to catch any of last night's, but I've been keeping an eye on it. It was pretty clear, you know, that Lakers series was interesting. Obviously, it wasn't last night, but like I felt like the Lakers had a good chance in that series. And then I watched Game
For
One.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I was like, the Lakers aren't winning this series. Because, you know, you look at that team, and there's a lot of teams I think the Lakers could have beaten in the playoffs. But a team with Rudy Gobert on it is not the team I want to face if I'm a team without a center, right? And Naz Reid, right? Like, that was just the worst possible matchup. Oh, and they have Anthony Edwards, who can actually, like, match up with LeBron in some form or fashion. Plus Luka, I don't know. Like, I get it. The Mavs fans are really mad that they traded him away. And I don't think they're going to benefit from that trade. Like, I understand, like, they're not better for that trade, but I don't like the way Luka is trending in the NBA. Like, every year you look at that guy, it seems like he's age 4. Like, I don't know how much longer he's going to have in a career where he's actually able to excel at an NBA level. he's getting out of shape. I've never seen an NBA player get more out of shape the longer they spend in the NBA. It is strange. Because you go back, you look at some of the highlights of his rookie season. Looks like a different dude. And I don't know if it's just something about, you know, processed foods and American, you know, fast food restaurants. I don't know. But I don't look at that guy and say, well, the Lakers are in good hands for the next 10 years. Just based on, like, he's going to wear down. Like, we talk about Zion. Why don't we and Luka does get talked about in that way. But I see the similar issues with him that Zion has had in his career. The difference is Zion plays a lot higher off the ground. So his body breaks down on him. But I don't know. Like, Lakers fans, they're going to have a good time. I think LeBron's going to be out of there this offseason. I'd be kind of surprised if he goes back. And you'll see that team become Luka's team. I don't know. I think the ceiling there is just the same as it was with the Mavs.
You think LeBron will really try his take his talents again somewhere else?
I think he's going to go to Dallas. I think that would be hilarious if he went down to Dallas and reunited with Kyrie and AD.
I wonder how Mavs fans would feel about all that then.
I think that if Nico Harrison pulled that off, I think the Mavs would have fans again. Because he's got to do something. They're ready to throw him overboard. I've never seen anything like that. Like, Saints fans might be fed up with Mickey Loomis. I mean, that's a whole other animal right there. That would be like if the Saints decided to trade Drew Brees in, like, 2018. Like, we got better options. Defense wins championships. I don't know. But no, I mean, obviously they got eliminated. Jalen Brunson, you know, my other take about the NBA playoffs is that the Knicks, if you remember those Isaiah Thomas Celtics teams, little tiny guy, he was scoring like 35 points a game.
Not the Pistons, Isaiah Thomas.
Not the Pistons, Isaiah Thomas, the new Isaiah Thomas, who was actually named Isaiah Thomas because his father lost a bet that the Pistons were not going to win the championship one year. And the bet was, if they do, you have to name your son Isaiah Thomas, which is actually kind of hilarious.
Right.
But it's spelled differently. Either way, he was this little tiny guy. He's like 5'9". He was incredible to watch. He was so exciting. Every time he stepped on the floor, you were like, this is great. I remember a seven-game series against the Wizards that was like just peak drama, perfect. But like that team, I watched it, and I knew every time I watched it, like, the ceiling for this team is the Eastern Conference Finals. They are never getting to the finals. They are never winning a championship as long as you are relying on a 5'9 scoring point guard to lead your team. And so why do I bring that up? The Knicks are the exact same team. The Knicks' ceiling is the Eastern Conference Finals. They are not winning a championship. As much as I love Jalen Brunson, he's so much fun to watch. Sure. He's a great scorer. He is a liability on defense. They do not have the type of team that can win a championship. And it's just funny to watch because, like, that series was great. That game winner he hit last night was fantastic. The Pistons were fun to watch. The Knicks were better. Just like the like 5, 6, 7 seeds against those Celtics teams, they lost. But they ran into LeBron James every year, and they're like, this ain't happening.
Is it because the Knicks are playing Boston next? You get a little bit of Celtics bias going on?
Maybe a little. But also, like, there's no way they're beating the Celtics. They might take him to 5 games. It'll be fun. Those games will be good.
Right.
The Celtics are going to win 4 out of 6. It might go 6. I'll give you 6. They're not winning that series because that's just not the build of a team that wins championships.
Then the other, you know, Eastern Conference matchup, we got the Cavs and Pacers, that's set. But the two matchups in the West, still a question. We know the Thunder have advanced and the T-Wolves are moving on. Tonight we'll find out maybe a little bit more with the Rockets at the Warriors, and then we still got Nuggets Clippers series. Man, oh man, really surprising that this Clippers team was able to at least fight back and tie this series up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but when you look at the players on that team, you're
sure,
like, all right.
Right.
You know, Kawhi Leonard is like one of the most enigmatic superstars over the last two decades, because it's like, this guy's won championships. He's elite in every sense of the word, but then, like, he'll just be gone for entire seasons. Like, all right, I guess he's not a factor this year.
Oh, yeah, he's still around.
But when he's healthy, he's one of the top 5 players in the NBA. I will tell you, the team that is built to win championship right now is the Thunder. Like, that team is absurd when you watch them. Like, they just come at you in waves. They're very similar to the Celtics in that, you know, they can defend all 5 positions. They have length at every position, and they shoot. And they shoot, and they shoot, and they shoot. But they can score at the rim, too. Like, they can win in multiple ways. And they're about, I don't know, 27 years younger than the Celtics.
Right.
I feel like everyone on that team is, like, 24 years old or under. They kind of remind me of what the Celtics were 5 years ago when you were trying to find your way with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But, no, there's some really good teams. I don't think the Rockets, is that series still going on?
Yeah.
Rockets, Warriors, what is it, 3-2?
That is, yeah, 3... 3-2 Golden State right now, and that next game will be
tonight, I think.
That's tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the Rockets are, you know, the Rockets and Pistons are very similar in that, like, the NBA is unique to me in the sense that you can see teams that are capable of winning, just haven't learned how to win in the playoffs yet. Like, the Cavs, I think, are there right now. It's like, that team's good enough to win, but until they win a meaningful playoff series, I won't believe they can.
Sure.
And I think the, you know, the Rockets right now are just like, they're playing a Warriors team that is a professional series winner in the playoffs, and they just don't know how to do it. So I think the Warriors are going to finish off that series. It's just funny because it's, what, 7-2? A 7-2 series, but the Warriors were probably the betting favorite. Because just how do you bet against the Warriors? Just like the Chiefs.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen, obviously, Steph's been carrying that Warrior squad, but that's nothing new.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Looking at a reminder for everybody, LSU baseball tonight will not be a 6 o'clock first pitch. That has been pushed back till 8 p.m. After the break, we're going to talk a little bit about some NFL.com post-draft power rankings. The Saints, not very high on our buddy Eric Edholm's list.
What, 8th? 6th? 5th?
Something around that.
On the wrong side of this.
We'll get into that and a little bit more about post-draft thoughts right here on WWL after the break. You can sound off with us this fabulous Friday if you're not hanging out at Jazz Fest. Chime in on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. It's 504-260-1870. Taking a break and be back with more on Sports Talk on WWL after this.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. LSU baseball, a delayed start this evening, folks. It's no longer a 6 o'clock first pitch. It has now been postponed to an 8 o'clock first pitch tonight, a 7:30 pregame coverage on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. We're going to have all three games of that series against Texas A&M. Game 2 tomorrow, still a 2 o'clock start, pregame 1:30, and then game 3 on Sunday, pregame of 12:30 with a 1 o'clock first pitch. All that LSU baseball action right here on WWL and, of course, streaming on the free Odyssey app. Mentioned we wanted to talk about some post-draft power rankings that came out on NFL.com. Eric Edholm, a guy we talked to quite a bit here on WWL, put out his list. And unfortunately, Houdat Nation, he has the Saints in his power rankings number 31 out of 32 teams post-draft.
Yeah. Well, did you expect them to do well is my first question.
Well, I didn't expect the team to take a dip down. It says down three spots after this draft. And I don't know. It doesn't feel like that it warranted that. I don't think there was that much around when you look at the other teams that he has here that the Saints fell that much. That's a pretty steep descent, considering you just put 9 new players on your roster, including a second-round quarterback.
Yeah, but they didn't put any flashy players on the roster, right? Like, they didn't draft Travis Hunter, right? They didn't draft Ashton Jeanty.
I love me some O-linemen.
And if you notice, you know, there's a few teams that up there a little higher than the Saints and the Jaguars and the and the Raiders.
The Giants are up
that
a spot.
Are teams that, like, I don't expect to be good. But they're apparently better than the Saints, and it's like, why? Okay, well, they drafted Ashton Jeanty, so suddenly the Raiders, despite really, I guess they have a quarterback, they have Geno Smith, but like, sure, we'll see. Yeah, jury's still out on that.
Now that you mention it, Jeff, I look here, Cleveland jumped up a spot, the Jaguars jumped up a spot, and so did the New York Giants, so that pushed the Saints down three spots.
Right, and it's because, ooh, the Giants had a sexy draft with Abdul Carter and Jackson Dart. The Jaguars had a sexy draft because they traded up for the big
time. I think your G-Man had a good draft.
I do, too. I still think they're going to be bad.
Right.
But, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I guess it's all about your methodology of, like, where do you think the Saints are going to be around the NFL? Like, the one I take question on is, like, why is everyone so high on the Falcons? And I say that with them at 21. Like, I don't think the Falcons... Like, what about the Falcons are people sold on that I just don't know?
That Penix is the future.
I mean...
Well, yeah, we haven't really seen it.
Well, he's just an old guy who's been injured a lot. I'm like, what are we...
An older prospect, right?
Why are we so excited about that? I don't know. And they I guess they finally got the pass rushers. I guess until they have a winning record, I'm just going to believe they will never have another winning record until the end of time. Like, I think until a team actually proves they can have a winning record, they should stop getting the benefit of the doubt that they're not going to be a sub-500 football team. They have not had a winning record since 2017.
You know,
a lot has changed since 2017.
Going through the whole list, though, too, Jeff, I'm seeing that the Saints had the biggest decline at -3. There were some teams that dropped two spots, one spot, but the Saints are the only one that he dropped down three ticks there.
It's really all about, like, okay, do you like the quarterback? Do you not like the quarterback? And if you like the quarterback, then you're like, yeah, they had a decent draft. If you don't like the quarterback, then you're like, they reached, you know? And I don't know. I like love the quarterback.
There's been definitely, I feel like, two takes on the Saints drafting Tyler Shuck. One is, oh, my God, he's injured all the time, and he's
and
an old man.
Years old.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The other twist on that is this: Tyler Shuck's coming into the perfect situation with the Saints because he does have more experience in college and may be more NFL ready because he's a more seasoned guy coming into this situation, which I am hoping to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think most people who talk a lot about Tyler Shuck have not watched him play at this point. Like, that's, and I'm not saying there's no one's watched him play. I'm just saying, like, I hear from a lot of people who have nothing to say other than he's older and he's been injured. And if you've watched him play, those are not the points you would come away with. So I don't know. Like, we'll see. I fully expect people to go out there and watch him operate an NFL offense and be like, whoa, you know, that's what it looks like when someone shows up with the exact traits you want to play quarterback in the NFL. Oh, okay, cool. And then we'll go from there. But, you know, the one that the Bucks, every year around this time, everyone's obsessed with the Bucks. And it's like, what did they do last year that got you like that excited? Obviously, they had the injuries.
Well,
Chris Godwin
won the division
went down
again.
Yeah, but again, like, can they win the division by winning more than 10 games one time? I don't know. but either way, it is what it is. Like, I watched a team that, again, needed to win the division to close out like a division title, or needed to win their final game to close out a division title, and barely got it done. They were down 10 points at halftime to the Saints, the 31st worst team in the NFL. Apparently, according to Eric. But they're ranked seventh in these. So they're a Super Bowl team. Anyway.
Well, you know what, Jeff? We're going to get into the data behind this NFL draft.
I guess we could.
Get a little take from our data scientist at Sumer Sports. Quinn McLaren will join us after the break. We'll break down what the Black and Gold picked up with their 9 selections. Also look at the NFC South and some of the other teams' drafts that we just went through. Just can't believe it's, you know, we're a week away from the draft and still putting a bow on things. We'll talk to Quinn McLean right here on WWL after the break. Stay tuned. We'll get to your calls, too, on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Be back right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We've been talking a little bit about the NFL draft to kick off the show and helping us break down the data side of things. Quinn McLean, data scientist at Sumer Sports, joining us now. Quinn, thanks so much for the time on this Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk the draft with y'all.
Going through what the Saints did first off the bat, we were kind of surprised they ended up sticking with all 9 selection. And just curious, from at least the, you know, the data analysis side of things, how did you feel the Saints fared out in this year's draft?
Yeah, it's a little bit different strategy than what we've seen from the Saints in previous drafts. I looked at the stat the other day from, in terms of their relative athletic score from MathBomb, it kind of like aggregates people's testing profile. They've never drafted a guy lower than 7.5 RAS. That may not mean a whole lot, but that's like a high premium athletics score. In this year's draft, they drafted 3 guys that were below that, which is kind of the first since in a while. And I think they did that with a very intense focus to address their run defense. We saw Saints defense last year was top bottom third in the league in terms of EPA per play rush allowed. And they got some guys that specialize in run defense to shore that up, hopefully.
So that would be Vernon, Broughton, Stutzman, and Riley? Who would those players be?
Broughton is really a run defender. He needs to work on a little bit in terms of his power moves and pass rush. Stanker from Virginia, he specializes more of a run defender, needs to work a little bit more in coverage. Stutzman, you touched on, is a tackling machine. Quincy Riley is a really good nickel corner that could specialize in run defense as well. And then, you know, Fadil Diggs, I think, is one of the sleeper picks for them. He's kind of a really good, productive motor guy that I think could add a lot of value for them.
When you look at the big selection in this draft, everyone's been talking about not the top overall pick for the Saints so much, but it's been, of course, the quarterback taken in the second round, Tyler Shuck. What's been your read on the newest QB in the Saints room over there?
Yeah, so I've actually been watching Tyler Shuck since 2019. I live in Oregon. I'm a big Oregon fan.
Okay.
Went there as an alum. So I think Tyler Shuck does really well in terms of the system. And Jeff Brohm, as you know, Aiden O'Connell has been developed into the league. We saw him have some initial success with the Raiders in that system. The thing you have to kind of take into account with Tyler Shuck is he does have the athleticism. He does have the arm strength, the prototypical build. He's, in some senses, the data would suggest he checks down a lot, but he does have that medium long-range accuracy within the right system. The one thing you have to keep in account with Louisville is they do run play action at a high clip, second highest in this draft behind Jackson Dart. And that play action, in a lot of cases, disguises a lot of things for quarterbacks and makes it a little bit easier on them. And there was in the data, he struggled a bit in short yard accuracy. He's elite in terms of our metrics and medium yard accuracy, about 10 to 20 yard accuracy range. I think if Kellen Moore can kind of, what we saw with Hurts and Herbert and Dak Prescott, target those 10 to 20 yards, I think he'll be fine. But he does have a sensitive, and one thing I really specifically dug in on him in situations where he was quick pressured, he didn't throw the ball at a high clip. So quick pressures is, you know, pressures within 2 seconds or less. He struggled in those areas in the data that I think he'll have to improve upon the next level.
You know, something we talk about a lot this time of year is value, right? Not necessarily, okay, you know, three years down the road, we look back and like, well, that was a bad quote-unquote value pick at the time, but I look at like an Alvin Kamara. You know, the Saints didn't get great value on that pick. They traded a second rounder in the future. They took a guy at the top of the third round who some people said might be available later, but then he turned into Alvin Kamara, so we don't talk about the value there. But, you know, there is always the question of, oh, well, is it worth taking the quarterback at number 40? Could you have waited till 71? Calvin Banks in the first round, they took him at 9. Some people think that was a bit of a reach. At the end of the day, it's probably more about, okay, the Saints have him here on their board. They're going to go get him. But where do you land on that, both as a concept and for the Saints specifically? Should teams be focusing more on that, on maximizing value, or – you know, should they be, okay, we really like this guy, he's got the traits, we might take him a little higher than maybe the boards would say?
Yeah, I think like an interesting example in this draft is Ashton Jeanty, right? Like Ashton Jeanty is a great running back, but drafting him at where you draft him, you're already locking him into a top three contract into the league. So that's a big bet as an organization to make, that you think he's already worth a top three contract in the league. And so typically, in areas where you have to shell out the most amount of money to people, offensive tackle, quarterback, wide receiver, edge rusher, those are where in early rounds is where you're going to, in my mind, spending a lot of your draft capital, because you're getting them at such a discount to what the market says they should be worth. And I think if you can, and we've seen this from the Eagles a lot of ways, just draft edge rushers year in, year out, and you could fill in some of those spots and continue to develop them and get them at premium picks, and know that maybe one or two of them pan out, and then they are worth the contract when you go to pay them.
Talking to Quinn McClain from Sumer Sports, a data scientist over there. We touched on the Saints. I was just curious, thoughts around the NFC South, what the Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Atlanta did, because from the looks of things, at least, sadly for us Houdat fans over here, it looks like all three teams had pretty decent drafts.
Yeah, I would say starting with Atlanta, they definitely kind of doubled down on areas of needs for them. They needed more of the pass rusher help, so they went and got James Pierce and Walker. From our standpoint, the trade for getting up to James Pierce is a big risk.
Right.
It's the latest I've seen a future first round pick be given up to trade up into the first round. You're in the 20s and promising a future first round pick. So good on the trade to get that back for James Pierce, especially a guy that I think that there's been a lot of question marks around him in terms of the character ability off the field and what kind of surrounds him. The production there is for James Pierce. I think he's an elite pass rusher from that standpoint. I would have had him top 10 if there wasn't other concerns there. And he's been one of the first guys that I've seen that absolutely dominates at the combine and is still dropping post draft. So that's telling you the things that you don't see on the field is kind of surrounding him. Jalen Walker's a little bit undersized for a pass rusher. I think he's a little bit of a tweener. He could play in the box, outside. I think there's some question marks on there. But the consistency in terms of passing the rusher hasn't always been there for him on the year. But I think there's a high upside with him in terms of rushing the passer. I think that's worthwhile. And there's the element that he played at Georgia. The Atlanta Falcons haven't drafted a person from Georgia in the first round in quite a while. The Panthers had a lot of good talent there. Our former vice president of research and development, Eric Eager, at Sumer Sports, is within his first year at the Panthers. They went and got Tet McMillan to kind of be, I would have thought that if they didn't get Higgins, they would have gotten Tet McMillan this offseason, and they kind of proved me true. Nick Scourton and Princely Yu, I'm not going to pronounce his last name because it's difficult for me, but Nick Scourton going into the 2024 season was considered a top 15 pick. I think he just didn't really vibe well in terms of the Texas A&M system. And the Texas A&M pass rusher is going to be the great anomaly of this draft is you have a lot of talented guys that the production just didn't match up there. Shamar Stewart has the athletic profile, but when you look at the production there, it wasn't there. And I think you were taking a bet that similar to Shamar Stewart, that he has that athletic profile and what you got from Purdue is going to pan out well for them. So I like that pick from a standpoint for the Panthers. Trevor Etienne, I think, is a little bit of a question mark on their draft. He's 5'8", and I've watched some film on him personally, and he doesn't always make the optimal decisions in terms of the holes that he cuts. But, you know, with Chuba Hubbard there as your kind of every down back, this might be a nice value pick for them. And then you go to the Buccaneers. I think a lot of people are lauding them in terms of the people they've drafted for this. I think the funny thing about the Bucs is they went and just drafted to existing strengths. They got, you know, some good, decent corners. They drafted Egbuka. Like, they didn't necessarily need Egbuka and Tez Johnson. They didn't necessarily need wide receiver. But they want to solidify in the division that we're going to do two things well, and that's pass the ball and defend the pass. And I think that's what shows of their draft is an interesting strategy to just keep drafting towards your strengths.
Okay, well, one more here. One thing I really appreciate about Sumer Sports is they've taken like the Madden approach of the badges. I guess it's more of a 2K approach to the badges. And when I appreciate it, I saw you tweeted about it here. Kelvin Banks, he's got the brick wall and the bulldozer badge.
All right,
which is like what I'd like to hear about my starting left tackle. I don't know. I'm just curious. What were your thoughts on the Kelvin Banks pick? I know some people react, oh, he's a third offensive lineman off the board. You know, I think he may have been lower for some people than maybe at number 9. I think the Saints are getting a high floor player. But what are your thoughts on Kelvin?
Kelvin's one of my favorite offensive line in this draft. He's super athletic. Only 8 pressures allowed in 2024, only 4 sacks allowed his entire career. I think the one transition for him is 79% of his snaps in his career were in a 2-point stance. And so I think they're going to be asking him to move inside to offensive guard. So you do expect a little bit of a transition for him. And also he saw a lot of light boxes, you know, people less than 6 guys in the box. I think you worry about like, is he going to be able to hold up against stunts or blitz situations since he didn't see a whole lot of that at Texas. Very athletic. In terms of we have an advanced metric called our, you know, pass rush get off. We have him an elite ability in terms of his first step off the lot, block in terms of pass block ability. And I think that'll translate to the next level with Fuaga on that side. So I'm a big fan of him. And I think he's one of our top 20 in all of college football this past year in terms of his ability to run block as well. So a guy that's shown both good production in run blocking and pass blocking. And I think the one thing that shows his athleticism is, he's one of the top offensive linemen in terms of like the amount of screen blocks he has. So getting outside of the blocks to block people on the side and the boundary, I think shows his athleticism and range that I think will be nice in that Kellen Moore system.
Great info. You're sharing with us, Quinn. Tell us folks out there what they can find more on Sumer Sports by logging in.
Yeah, if you go to SumerSports.com, there will be the draft guide where you can see kind of a detailed breakdown of all the different players from this past draft. We have articles, research articles. I wrote an article about how different running back schemes translate from college to pro, so you can see more in-depth research. We have our Sumer Brain, which is basically just a chatbot that you can ask any football question to, and it'll come back with a very detailed response. So we're putting out a lot of cool, unique products that people can go and interact with.
Quinn McLean, definitely appreciate the information. Like I said, data scientist over at Sumer Sports. Go check out their great work over there. Appreciate the time on this Friday, man. Hope you have a great one.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Quinn.
Quinn McLean, SumerSports.com. Go check it out over there. Works with another guy we have on a lot, Sam Bruckhaus, former two-linebacker. And also former Falcon and Thomas Dimitroff, who we had on Radio Row during the Super Bowl week.
Yeah, and obviously Eric Eager used to be there. He's now with the Panthers.
Working in the NFL.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff going on there. No, and it is kind of fun. Like if you ever played 2K or Madden, they have the badges, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, Showstopper and stuff, and they kind of associate that for all the players, and it's kind of fun to kind of go through it.
So you said now too, Brooks has the brick wall and what else?
Banks has the brick wall and bulldozer badges.
Bulldozer and a brick wall. Like you said, that's what I want in my old lineman.
Sounds good. Yeah.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. You can chime on this fun Friday. Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870. Be right back after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, bringing it until 6 p.m. this evening. Got a programming note that LSU baseball has been pushed back a little bit. Their matchup at College Station for Game 1 against Texas A&M. Now an 8 o'clock first pitch. Pre-game coverage will start right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. 7:30, dealing with a bit of rain and lightning over there. I knew it wasn't good earlier today, guys, when I log into weather.com and see College Station, and it's got the cloud with the lightning bolt and a red exclamation point next to it. And I was like, uh-oh, it doesn't look like we're going to be starting on time here. The Tigers, I think, Charlie, you mentioned it before the show. It seems like they only deal with this on Fridays, though.
I don't want to be pessimistic, but it looks bad in College Station, unfortunately, over at Blue Bell
Park. Oh, you're saying overall for tonight?
Yeah, as far as tonight goes. Like, it's been pushed back to 8 o'clock as of now, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get an update. Because you remember last week, the Tennessee game goes to, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, right where Bear Jones hit that ball that's still, you know, out in orbit somewhere in outer space. But, yeah, no, it feels like it's on Friday nights that all this weather comes in. It's been pretty consistent.
Yeah, we'll see how that takes shape in College Station, and hopefully it doesn't affect the rest of the weekend for the Tigers at College Station taking on Texas A&M, a matchup that I definitely thought this Aggie team was going to be a lot better this season. I know they had their struggles early on, but they're still a very dangerous roster and pitching staff.
I think one of the biggest surprises to me with Texas A&M was that Ryan Prager was struggling early on, and he's who LSU's going to be playing tonight.
Sure.
You know, it's a battle of aces on the mound, lefty aces with Cade Anderson and Prager. Prager was nails, especially in the postseason last year for Texas A&M. He's a good pitcher, and he's an experienced pitcher, but for some reason, he was kind of getting off to a slow start in the SEC. I think he's maybe picked it up a little bit in recent weeks. The ERA is fine. Jay Johnson came on the show yesterday and talked about him, that he's going to be a tough customer in this opener, but so is Cade Anderson. So that's always the thing. Like, these Friday nights in SEC play, it's always ace versus ace, and LSU feels like they have an advantage over 90% of the teams in the SEC with Cade Anderson on the mound.
Yeah, it'll be another key matchup for this Tiger team. And you've heard Jay Johnson constantly describes these weekend games, guys, as basically a regional, which will be
super regional.
We'll be getting to soon enough, that's for sure. Playoff time getting closer. I think there's, what, two more SEC series after this weekend?
They have Texas A&M, they have Arkansas, and they have South Carolina.
And then boom.
And then we're going to Hoover. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
We're
going
to go to break, top of the hour news. When we get back, we'll be breaking down some of what Scott Shanley said on Sports Talk earlier this week about those Saints draft picks. Be right back with more of Sports Talk right after this. Welcome into hour two of Sports Talk. A gorgeous day out here in New Orleans. Not so much at College Station. That's where LSU baseball is. You heard in the Sports Flash, game time's been pushed back. No longer a 6 o'clock first pitch for Game 1 against the Aggies. That's now 8 p.m., 7:30 pregame coverage right here on WWL AMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Looking around, some of the things going on in sports, we got, you know, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. Thought it was interesting. We got Haley Van Lith And Angel Reese back in the PMAC tonight. Why, you may say? There is a preseason WNBA game between the Chicago Sky and the Brazil national team taking part there. And both Angel Reese and Van Lith are now teammates again in Chicago. So good to see at least both of them back in the PMAC this evening.
Party.
Little shout out to women's basketball.
Yeah. No, good stuff.
The LSU Tigers, like I mentioned, they're in College Station, the baseball team, and that game is an 8 o'clock start. We've been talking about the NFL Draft 2 in the earlier segments and what the Saints have done. Looking forward to getting a glimpse of these guys this coming week as rookie minicamp will start Friday for the Saints. And, you know, much of the talk, you know, you mentioned the first-round pick for the Saints with Kelvin Banks Jr., but it's really been about the quarterback, and because it is the most important position throughout the NFL, it's no surprise that Tyler Shuck's been getting a ton of the press and the pub, and it was great, though, seeing him around, saw that he stopped by Drago's, had some char-grilled oysters, been talking about his new, what's going to be his number two also with the Saints, can't have number nine, that's what he was in college, so I know he mentioned, I think, 6 and 18 he was looking at picking.
Yeah, and Thomas Morstead said, you can wear 6. Go for it,
kid. Love the fact, too, Thomas Morstead is such a NOLA dude, even though he hasn't played here forever now.
Yeah.
But definitely a part
away,
of the Saints community still.
And stuff,
right, still, exactly.
Like, yeah. No, I think 6 would be a good number. Numbers in a lot of instances aren't that big of a deal. Like, yeah, whatever, pick a number. Who cares? For the quarterback, it does. Like, if you're going to be a big-time quarterback, if you're going to be a franchise quarterback, like the quarterback that teams look at and say, you're our dude, the number is important, right? Like, I don't know, because people are going to buy that jersey, right? Like, if your third-round wide receiver shows up and, you know, Tre'Quan Smith, what number did he wear, 10? Like, it doesn't matter because no one's buying a Tre'Quan Smith jersey. No offense to Tre'Quan out there.
Now Brandon Cooks has 10.
Does he?
Yeah.
He has 10 again? Okay. But, like, that's my point. It's like, for the quarterback, I don't know, like, it feels important. It feels like it's got to look right. It's got to look right. I don't want my quarterback wearing like 26. I don't know.
I thought it was interesting, too, because he mentioned 18. I'm like, wait a minute, that's Spencer Rattler. But Spencer has switched to number 2 now.
Yeah. Apparently, that's the backup quarterback number.
I'm number 2.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying. well, Jameis wore number 2. So that was my point. But, I was thinking about this. Like, realistically speaking, if Derek Carr has surgery, he doesn't play.
Right.
I actually think, And I think Tyler Shuck's going to be your starter. And, you know, I was thinking about this, like, as far as backup quarterbacks go, the Saints aren't really in a position where they could afford to pay a veteran back. Like, when Andy Dalton was here and you were paying him, like, $8 million, like, that's an expensive backup relative to what you could pay, which is almost nothing, right? A minimum salary. If you're going that route, like, I feel like Spencer Rattler is actually not a terrible option to be a backup quarterback, because the one time we saw him come in relief as a backup, which is what your primary job is, he played really well in that Washington game where he came in, they were down, I don't know, double digits, and he rallied him back. They could have won that game. It came down to a two-point conversion to win it. So I don't know, I think that quarterback room is actually in decent shape. It's just a question of, you know, what's the ceiling on Tyler Shuck? I think it's higher than people give him credit for. Lewis Riddick, if you want to listen to Lewis Riddick,
Someone who loves Shuck, right?
If you are in the mood to get
positive,
to aboard the Tyler Shuck hype train while there are still plenty of seats, you could basically pick your car, pick your location, do whatever you want. You know, you could put in an order, get a drink, wait for everyone else to join you. The Tyler Shuck hype train is going to be filling up quickly if you're listening to Lewis Riddick. And I don't know. I think Lewis Riddick's a good analyst. I think he's, you know, one thing he pointed out, and Jeff Duncan wrote a really good column talking to Lewis Riddick, and, you know, one thing he points out is, like, so much of the analysis you hear Tyler Shuck is, like, so sophomoric and basic and never gets to the question, the basic question that we should all be trying to answer. Is he a good quarterback? You know, like, oh, but he's 25. That's not good. Oh, but he got hurt. Not at Louisville, Texas Tech. I don't like that. Okay. Anything else? Nah, that's all I need to know. Like,
That's what everyone else is feeding me, so no, I don't have anything right. else.
Oh, I saw a couple clips on Twitter that got retweeted.
Two highlights.
Yeah. Low lights,
right.
Yeah. But, you know, I just think it's funny, and we'll see. When people go out there, I think they're going to be impressed. They're going to see Tyler Shuck, all 6'5" of Tyler Shuck towering over Spencer Rattler and Jay Kaner. He's going to look like he's older than them, too. He's just going to look like their big brother. And I'm interested in seeing the reaction from people when they actually like go out to those practices and see him in person, because I think people are going to be impressed. I really do.
The way things have gone with Derek Carr, I think folks need to get excited about something, and hopefully Shuck can be that guy.
Right. Why have we gotten to the point we can't get excited? The part of being a fan is like, yeah, you can be critical. You do that. You get mad when things aren't going well. I get it. You expect a lot. You demand a lot. Yes. But there's also a level of like, it's okay to be blindly optimistic at certain points of the season, right? Just say like, okay, I'm excited. Until he gives me a reason to not be excited about it, I'm going to be excited. That's how I operate. Not everyone's like me. Not everyone's glass half full, right? Some people think there's a hole in the glass, and sometimes it feels like there is. But I don't know.
Just always mad.
Everyone should choose to fan however they want to fan, right? I'm just speaking about how my philosophy on fanhood is like, okay, I'm going to be blindly optimistic right now, and then I'll be disappointed. But I have to be optimistic before I be disappointed.
Well, on the line, Jeff, we definitely got a longtime card-carrying member of the Who Dat Nation on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. James wants to sound off about the draft. What you got for us on this glorious Friday, James?
So I'm glad you guys brought up numbers, and happy Friday. Best way I can explain it, since I've been talking to you guys, is like this. Personally, I think I'm a halfway decent investor, and the number one rule in stock is never fall in love with your investment. You want to be able to buy and sell. And for that particular reason, that's why Loomis is at the very bottom of the GM in NFC South. Right above him, Is this the guy that came from here? That's the guy. That's
Terry Fondo.
That guy. That's the former staffer. He invested everything for James Pierce, who is a volatile player. He will be a volatile stock. So you either win or lose. And if he loses, then he doesn't have a number one pick next year with Peyton Manning and a host of other guys. I kind of like the guy that was at Tennessee that moved to USC. But my point is, these are two stock guys that aren't doing it the right way. We are basically the falling knife if you follow the graphs and stocks. We're the falling knife. We got poor investments. Everything's going down. The volatile guy is the Atlanta Falcons, and the two above is basically Jason Light. He's number one because, you know, if you look at the graph, 5 years in a row, it'll be the fifth year they win the division. He's making good investments. And then the linebacker, who I kind of like from Carolina, he's the guy that's making decent investments. He's helping his stock by getting a halfway decent wide receiver to help that midget, that quarterback. So until Loomis changes his philosophy or leaves, we're going to be at the very bottom. We're the falling knife, fellas. It is what it is.
But here's the thing. So we can say that, but the Saints operated with a very different philosophy in this draft than they have in previous drafts.
Honestly, you look at Mickey Loomis' resume, and it's kind of stellar overall. I know folks don't want to hear that.
Yeah, you know, I also think it's like, okay, it's more than just Mickey. It's the scouting. It's the entire draft department, right? It's Jeff Ireland's group. I do feel like you've seen the Saints make some adjustments this year. Like they've reset the trajectory a little bit. Now, whether that's a long-term change or a short-term change to, you know, kind of offset some of the misses of the last years, you saw them go for a lot of higher floor players, less boom potential, but less bust potential. Right, you're looking at players who should be at minimum core special teams contributors in several of these mid round picks.
Sure.
You're looking at guys who were highly productive in college, not, you know, the Shamar Stewart. That was the whole conversation about Shamar Stewart. He had four and a half sacks over 3 years at Texas A&M, but he has all the traits in the world.
Potential, baby.
Right, that's not what you went with. right? And yeah, you know, you talk about linebackers, you talk about safeties. You know, you between Jonas Sanker and Danny Stutzman, you have over 400 tackles over the last 2 years in their respective environments at their respective programs. Danny Stutzman led the Big 12 in tackles 3 years ago as a sophomore. Devin Neal is the all-time leading rusher at Kansas, 16 touchdowns on the ground each of the last two seasons. So I think, you know, you not only made a ton of picks, did not trade up, did not sacrifice value that way, but you picked a lot of players who you know who they are. There's no question of what they can do when they're featured because they've all been featured.
That's what I've noticed about this draft as critical. Maybe that some analysts felt that the Saints reached a little too high in the first round with Banks or maybe even with Tyler Shuck in the second. I feel like those later selections for this team, though, a lot of folks do have that consensus of it being some really quality, you know, pieces you're bringing in here.
Yeah, and my point is, like, I'm all for being critical of the strategies and what has gotten you to this point, but I can't sit here and say they have done nothing differently, because one of my issues with the Saints, and I've said this to you many times, is they haven't gotten enough bites at the apple. They've been sacrificing too much value.
We got bites.
to target specific players, and then when those players don't hit, it feels even more damaging because you sacrificed opportunities. Like a sixth-round pick, Devin Neal has a chance to be a contributor on this team. Right, Maliki Matavau has a chance to have a significant role on this team as a blocking tight end. In the past drafts, you haven't even made those picks. Look at the Adam Trautman draft. You gave up the second half of your board to go up and get a guy that played 3 years for you and then you got rid of because it just didn't work. So, I don't know. Like I think there's positive things that were done in this draft that I think address some of the issues. So, we'll have to see how it plays out. But the idea that they're just not changing at all, they're just stubbornly doing the same thing over and over again, I don't think that's what happened.
As we head out to break right now, I want to remind anyone listening, LSU baseball now at 8 o'clock first pitch, 7:30 pregame right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. We're going to step away. When we get back, we'll hear what a former Saint has to think about some of these draft picks. Scott Shanley right here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, we've been talking about the NFL draft. Still, was just a week ago. We already knew the Saints' first-round pick already and getting ready for day two of the draft. Gentlemen, it's, you know, kind of all a blur, went by quickly, even though we had long days.
Yeah, well, it goes by quickly when you were
making 9 selections.
Well, no, when you were working the entire time. There's not a lot of downtime where you can kind of relax and assess and think back on. You know, me and Charlie hosted 2 pre-draft shows on Friday and Saturday. I remember 2% of them. I don't know what I said. I don't know what points I made. I don't know whether I was right or I was wrong.
Just words coming out.
Well, we did it. We did shows.
Looking at the we had our draft recap show at the Silver Slipper Casino on Monday.
Yeah.
Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, along with Mike Dettelier, spoke with former Saint great Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ. Asked him about a bunch of the Saints draft picks that we're going to get into now. Start off with, obviously, number one, Kelvin Banks Jr. What does Shanley think about the Saints' 9th overall selection?
Yeah, I think Sark's done a really good job at Texas. They not only recruit great players, but they have toughness. I think he's brought toughness to the program. It's no longer the, you know, the soft Texas guys that you used to think of. And, you know, thinking back to last year, I remember watching a lot of Texas football, and Kelvin Banks stood out. And a lot of times offensive linemen don't stand out. But I remember seeing him thinking, wow, this guy is going to be a stud in the NFL. And unlike a lot of fans, I was kind of torn at number 9, like, no. Quit picking offensive linemen. You would get sick of picking defensive linemen, offensive linemen every year. But when you look at it, tell me a better player at that spot who you feel like now you have two concrete guys at left tackle and right tackle. It's a hard thing to pass up on a guy like Kelvin Banks when he's sitting there at 9. Even if you trade back a couple spots, which I kind of wanted to do to grab more picks, there's no certainty he's going to be there anymore, because I think a lot of people had him really high on the boards. And, you solidify your left tackle and right tackle, that's more than probably 75% of the league can say. So you get those two positions taken care of, and now you can worry about the rest.
Scott Shanley talking about Kelvin Banks Jr., and like he mentioned, what did you think this team was going to do? I know, you know, you look at some of the mock drafts, and even I was guilty of it, trying to pick a position player, and it was like, nah, they were sticking with trenches, folks, and you end up beefing up that offensive line even more.
Yeah, well, I know Scott got worked up a little bit. He was a little peeved.
A little different.
He was a little peeved when they took the offensive line. I mean, he pointed out that the Saints Super Bowl offensive line was not a bunch of first round picks. It was, you know, I think Stinchcomb was the highest drafted. He was a second rounder, but you know, it's just the fact is, hey, you want to bring in a stud offensive lineman. You don't have a ton of money to throw around in the free agent market. This is where you find them. You find them in the first round. And you know, one thing that he brought up, and we don't have to get to the clip because we got a lot of clips to get through. But you know, he also brought up like, okay, why is the run game coming back in the NFL? You know, why is that the power run game? You look at the Eagles, you look at the Packers, you know, the Ravens. Like, why is that suddenly becoming a bigger thing? Well, it's because teams have adjusted to the pass-first mentality in the NFL. Linebackers are getting smaller. You know, you don't play with three linebackers on the field. You play with, it's a nickel league now, so you got a lot of smaller guys. And so teams are deciding, hey, we are going to play too deep, and we are going to force everything underneath, and we're going to trust that you're not going to run the ball. Well, if you can run the ball, then okay, that's a huge advantage. But a lot of teams aren't willing to do that. Now, the other thing is, hey, we're going to play too deep. We're just going to go one-on-one. We're going to trust that our pass rushers are better than your offensive linemen. And teams don't want to be sending extra pressure when they have people sitting over the top. They don't have the bodies. Otherwise, you are going to run all over them. So if you can pass protect one-on-one on the edges, if you can pass protect without sending help every play because you're like, we don't trust Trevor Penning to hold up on one-on-one. We have to help him. We have to put someone over there because Micah Parsons is over there or whoever is on that side, and we have to help. If you don't feel like you have to do that, massive, massive advantage. And any team that can say that is probably a team that has stud tackles on both sides of the line. And so I think, you know, the Saints are kind of getting ready for that reality, is they want to be able to pass protect the way they did back when Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead were here.
You mentioned Micah Parsons. Surprisingly, they did a pretty good job against him last year.
Yeah, but if you look and say, well, how did they do a good job? It's because they had a tight end and a running back chipping him on every play.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, who's coming at me this time? It's one of six different people. And that's the thing. Like, yes, you know, you can do that. They also handled Myles Garrett very well, but what are you giving up to do that, right? Like, and in that game, it didn't matter because they scored. Like, that was the point where they were just scoring at will. But in a close game, suddenly your offense is incredibly limited because you have to help the pass rush. And so that's what you're trying to do when you bring in a Kelvin Banks. You are trying to set up a scenario that you can have a much, much simpler offensive line plan than what you've had to have with, you know, making up for some of the inadequacies that you've been dealing with.
From O-line, we're going to go talk about the D-line now. Saints' third-round pick, their first one. Vernon Broughton out of Texas, the defensive tackle. What, Shanley, think about that pick for the Saints?
I think I'm obligated for Vernon to be my favorite player because he's a Cy Rage Ram in Houston, and my brother coached him in high school. So I know a lot about Vernon. Vernon came out as a defensive end, went to Texas, and the first thing I did my brother texted me right away and said, we got a Cy Rage Ram that's a New Orleans Saint. And I said, is he tough? And he goes, oh, he's tough. You're going to love him. So I'm putting a lot of stock into my brother's high school evaluation of Vernon since he coached him. But, yes, when you talk about going from a 4-3 to a 3-4, you need those body types. You need those big bodies up front. Those guys are going to get double-teamed. They're going to have to two-gap. They're going to have to keep the linebackers clean. So I definitely like what they did. And you talk about Gotcha. You need those big body types because the run defense just was not good enough. Hasn't been good enough the last couple of years. And really, they lost a handful of games just based on how bad their run defense was. So I love the big bodies they're getting on the defensive line.
In his career with the in Texas, we had Broughton, 69 tackles, 11 stops for loss, 6 sacks, 4 fumbles recovered, 3 pass breakups, and 2 forced fumbles. Productive. Pretty good production.
Yeah. No, and I mean, you know, you're just stacking big bodies, right? Like, it's hard to, you know, Vernon is one that I think when you're talking about, you know, we talked to the Sumer Sports Quinn McClain earlier, and it's like value, right? I think if you're trying to question value, that's a pick that a lot of people would look at because, you know, I don't think Vernon was the 71st prospect on a lot of boards. He's probably a lot lower than that. I think the Saints feel like, you know, I think when the Saints feel like they have a really good read on a player, they have good intel on a player, they don't have questions around a player, they are much more likely to go for that player. You know, and I think that's one of the things that people often overlook is, you know, fit, character, personality. Like, is he going to fit into that locker room? And teams are going to draft guys a lot higher when they feel like that's the case. And in this case, you have Bo Davis, who knows him very, very, very well,
right,
coaching that defensive line group. And I think, you know, when you talk about pounding the table, you talk about doing whatever. I don't know how vocal Bo Davis was about bringing Broughton in, but I'm sure he was highly supportive of the idea. And there's also a very funny clip we can play if we ever want to from Not Another Teen Movie, because since it's already been brought in. So just saying, we can throw that in there.
Looking at the Saints' other third-round pick, I feel like this guy has generated a ton of post-draft buzz. All of a sudden, a lot of folks talking about safety. Jonas Sanker out of Virginia. Here's Scott Shanley.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's incredible. It's basically arena football without the arena. And it's fun, and it's a lot of people. You don't even need bleachers because everybody just stands around the rope and watches the game. Field's 80 yards long, it's narrower, probably 40 yards wide. But it's a fun game to play. And when you go to those small towns and grow up the way some of us guys do, it's what you do, and you don't know any different. But yeah, I think with Jonas, you watch his tape of Virginia, and I thought he closed fast, he tackled, he was physical. And when you look at, you know, obviously where Tyron is, just like Alvin where he is in his career, you got to start building depth behind these guys. I like the Reed signing in the offseason. I think he's really going to help at the safety position. So, yeah, you got to start getting some of these young guys and start getting them to learn under these veterans while the veterans are there. And that's how you kind of pass the torch. So hopefully Jonas turns out to be a great safety, and he's definitely going to be a great special teams player his first year.
So the beginning of that clip, that's Scott talking about eight-man football, because Jonas Sanger came up in the eight-man football circuit, which it's what it sounds like, eight-man football. The field's a little different in terms of size. The game, everyone's an eligible receiver. But Scott also came up playing eight-man football. He's like one of the goats of eight-man football. So it's just kind of fascinating. Like, you really don't see that very often. I've never watched a game of eight-man football. I wouldn't even know what it looks like other than some highlights that I've watched of Jonas and Scott as I was looking back at the Shanley tape. But no, it's... you want kind of that volume tackling safety. You want that kind of small linebacker body. I'm curious if he can develop into an elite slot option. And I know, like, in Brandon Staley's defense, it's not a nickel corner, it's a star.
So same difference, though. Come on.
I'm curious. I think that's kind of the vision for him long term. It's not necessarily as a deep safety. It's just that hybrid Derwin James type player, because he has the body type and he can be more that box safety option.
Last year started all 12 games, 98 tackles, 2 sacks, 8.5 stops for loss, an interception, 4 pass breakups, 5 passes defensed, and as the Cajun Cannon would like to say, a thumper.
Yes, correct.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk, getting ready for LSU baseball. Delayed start, folks, not a 6 o'clock first pitch, now an 8 p.m. start. 7:30 pregame coverage right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. When we return, we'll get into our triple option feature after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, time to get into our triple option feature. We sound off on some of the day's top topics or things that interest us around the sports world. Guys, I'm going with our former LSU basketball coach over here and McNeese guy, Will Wade, who's now over at NC State and is already getting himself ingrained with the fans over there. They were going in and checking in on all their season ticket holders, and Will Wade on the phone, and here's a little taste of what he's talking to the fan base over there at NC State, the Wolfpack.
Teddy, hey, this is Will Wade from NC State men's basketball. How are you?
Get out of here.
What's up, man? Yo.
Yo.
It's Will Wade.
Get out of here.
I'm serious. I'm calling you. You're on the season ticket list. We got to get you to renew your season tickets on the lower sideline, man.
No, man.
Well, I'm serious. Huh?
No, dude, who is this?
It's Will Wade!
Alright, well, you sound like him. This is absurd.
It's me! I'm serious, it's me! I'm calling from Patrick in the ticket office's phone.
Dude, I'm so pumped that you're here. I'm so pumped, man.
We appreciate all your support and love to have you renew your season tickets and make sure you're in Lenovo ready to roll.
Alright, yep. Let's roll, man. You closed it.
All right, let's get it done. I look forward to meeting you soon, brother.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you, man. Hopefully you settle in a rally, all right? We're all happy you're here. Really appreciate you coming up here, man. It's going to be awesome.
I appreciate you, Teddy. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Will.
Howdy.
Yeah, thanks, Coach.
Bye now.
Coach Will Wade, now the head coach over at NC State. Obviously, things didn't quite work out here at LSU because of the NCAA violations, but he led LSU to the NCAA tournament, guys, in 3 of the 5 years, including a trip to the Sweet 16. Then he went to McNeese and led the Cowboys to back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances. Have no doubt Wade's going to have success in his new destination. Definitely wishing him the best. And it's almost like that one that got away for LSU. Unfortunately, the situation and what happened, things are a whole lot different in college basketball now. But to think of what Wade ended up getting fired for at LSU, knowing that it was going around college basketball and just... he ended up on the butt end of things, to say. Jeff, now going to go over to you for your triple option.
Yeah, so for once, I'm going to take this outside of the realm of New Orleans. And, you know, the biggest bit of news that happened today, probably Greg Popovich stepping down as the Spurs head coach. He's going to transition into the team president role. Is Charlie behind me making angry faces because that's what he was going to say?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We should have communicated on this in advance. But no, yeah, I mean, Greg Popovich... probably the greatest NBA coach of all time. I mean,
it's shocking to see he was there starting 1996.
It's debatable, maybe, but I mean, you look at, you know, he was the coach of the year 3 times, 5 NBA championships. He was the NBA coach of the month 17 different times. It's the most in NBA history. And, you know, I think, you know, he's an important guy. You want to keep him around the franchise, right? You know, it obviously completely different ends of the spectrum, but, you know, Brad Stevens with the Celtics had kind of like lost his steam with that team, and I feel like made a similar decision of kind of moving up into the front office rather than continuing to coach the team on a daily basis. And you've seen what that team has done since. They've gone to the finals 2 different times. They won one of them with 2 different coaches, Ime Udoka and Joe Mazzulla. So, you know, there is some hope that he can kind of, you know, that team with Victor Wembanyama and all those star players can still get it done. Mitch Johnson, who was the Spurs assistant coach, basically head coach all year, is going to be their new head coach. So it's pretty consistent. And obviously an end of an era there. Like, the Spurs were just that team for so long. You're like, yeah, they're winning 55 games, and we'll see what they do in the playoffs. Like, you know, it's going to be weird to not see him out there.
Yeah, you wish Pop the best, and obviously good for the Spurs that... yeah,
a lot of health issues, right? Like, right. He was dealing with a lot of health issues.
He's not stepping away from the team entirely, though.
Yeah, he's going to be in the front office and still going to be
involved with the Spurs organization. Like you said, you think of the San Antonio Spurs, obviously there's that great list of players that they've had, but steering the way has always been Popovich.
I kind of felt like he would have retired by now if they didn't land the number one pick at Victor Wembanyama. I feel like he just wanted to stick around to coach the, you know, the once in a generation player, and it just came like a couple years too late for him.
Charlie, have you gotten anything together that you're going to go coach Pop? But what you got for triple option?
No, Jeff went, you know, generic enough, so I'm sticking with Pop because I got some numbers about Greg Popovich, the winningest coach in NBA history, 5 NBA titles. This is what blows my mind. 18 straight 50-win seasons at the helm. In 29 years, he went 18 straight 50-win seasons. I remember how excited we were that the Pelicans won 49 games last year. I mean, this guy did 18. It's unbelievable. 3-time NBA Coach of the Year, 170 playoff wins. And this is an awesome stat that I saw from StatMuse. Greg Popovich has more playoff wins than the Hawks, Heat, Suns, Rockets, Bucks, Jazz, Cavs, Pacers, Trailblazers, Mavericks, Nuggets, Wizards, Kings, Nets, Clippers, Magic, Raptors, Grizzlies, Timberwolves, Hornets, and Pelicans. That is 21 NBA franchises.
I was about to say, so basically everyone but the Lakers and the Celtics and
Greg Popovich has more playoff wins than 21 NBA franchises.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable career. And Jeff, to your point about he could be considered the greatest NBA coach of all time, I think there's a legitimate argument. Like, people will say Phil Jackson. Yes, I understand. You know, if you go back with Red Auerbach, sure, whatever. But, I mean, Greg Popovich, just the coach of a generation. He was unbelievable for 29 years in San Antonio.
And he never had the Kobe's or the Mike. Like, there's obviously some elite players, superstar players that went through the Spurs organization. But there's none like a Kobe tier or a LeBron tier. Like, he did it with a lot of elite players like Kawhi Leonard and Manu Ginobili, like Tim Duncan. No one that, like, you see on, like, all these highlight reels. but just really, really good basketball players.
Man, Tim Duncan's pretty damn good, though.
Oh, yeah, but, like, do you ever, like, catch him on, like, oh, the top 100 plays of the season? Right, it's a Tim Duncan bank shot from 14 feet away. You know?
The big fundamental.
Yeah. You don't make highlight reels of fundamental basketball, but you do win titles. You do win 50 games with fundamental basketball.
That is our wrap on our triple option feature, folks. We'll be right back on WWL. Well, folks, as we're wrapping up today's edition of Sports Talk, got word from the LSU Sports Radio Network. Due to inclement weather in College Station, tonight's game has been postponed and rescheduled as part of a doubleheader that'll be beginning 2 p.m. tomorrow. Pre-game coverage right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app, 1:30. Saturday's first game will be followed by the second matchup. We'll start 1 hour after the first game is completed. We'll have all that for you on WWL LSU coverage. Of the game one now will be 1:30 tomorrow. Keep it locked right here for more on WWL. Have a great night, everyone.